Welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring how to create content that gets the most bang for your buck. Joining me to share some really actionable tips is Kate Newens, SEO manager at Beyond Identity, who happens to be a client of ours recently. So I'm excited about that as well. Welcome to the show, Kate.
I'm so happy to be here, Amanda. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, your topic. I'm really excited to delve into this because I'm pretty sure that literally everyone listening is going to have something actionable they can do right after this is over, which is amazing. I mean, that's kind of the best case scenario. But there are a lot of things that can fall under this umbrella of making content last as long as possible or get the most, you know, ROI on it. And I know one of the things I've talked about on the show and that a lot of people have mentioned is like repackaging content, right? So like creating something and then maybe you create other visual suits on social or whatever. But you've also talked about how just knowing that it could be sold for different channels is beneficial too, right? Can you talk about that?
Yeah. You know, sometimes when we look at these pieces, you know, and I think of a lot of it through a linkability, if that's a word, you know, something that's going to be a linkable asset, you know, sometimes these can cost a decent amount of money. And, you know, like if you want to spend a couple thousand dollars on a piece of content for some companies, you know, that's a lot of money. And so being able to show that it's going to be worthwhile across different marketing channels can help you get the buy-in and ultimately get the check, you know, written and cashed. So something that I've liked to do, at past companies and where I work now is working with, you know, our email marketing channel, our social channels, and talking to, you know, the channel managers for those and saying like, listen, what kind of piece, you know, I'm thinking about, let's just say I'm talking about a piece on like, you know, fashion and sports, just something random, and thinking about creating a piece that's going to get links, but is also going to work well, like for an email newsletter or for Twitter or Facebook or Pinterest or something like that. And you can help when you're trying to get buy-in from leadership, if you're able to show like, okay, our social manager is saying like, it thinks it's going to get X amount of engagement, and our email marketing newsletter thinks it can help, like this would get a certain amount of like click through or open rate or something like that. It just gives you additional levers to pull when you're trying to get, you know, a CMO or a marketing director to say it's okay. Yeah. Let's run with like a piece of content that normally, you know, you wouldn't be spending like a couple thousand dollars on a piece of content, but showing that it's going to be valuable and all these different channels can be really helpful. And then on top of it, you know, picking a piece too that is going to have organic reach. You know, obviously we're thinking about this from a link perspective, but if you're working on something where it's also going to get a decent amount of traffic throughout the year, that's also really beneficial. So when you're thinking about it, I've just found it's been really helpful. And then on top of it, when you are working with like your email marketing manager and your social manager, like they're excited about the piece too. So, cause they've been a part of the process from the very beginning. So instead of going to them after the fact and being, you know, saying, hey, can you include this in the email newsletter? Or, hey, can you promote this on social? They're more excited about it because they've been a part of the process from the very beginning. So you just get a lot more people on board and a lot more buy-in with the process.
Absolutely. I love how you kind of bake buy-in into that explanation. Obviously, you know, we love talking about that on the show. But I also like that you mentioned how, we talked on the show about sales, like having marketing and sales assets work together. But you're even saying to get metrics from these people who work in email or social to be like, oh, can you estimate maybe how this will help open rates or something like that? Because just bringing those numbers, I presume, so leadership is even more effective than just saying that it's going to be used across certain channels.
For sure. And yeah, I mean, I've worked in some very data-driven organizations where if you didn't come with numbers or like, you know, conversion metrics or, you know, something that just showed a value of a piece, it just wasn't going to get through, which has been a blessing and a curse in my past, because, you know, sometimes you just have a gut feeling that something's going to work, but it's also been really helpful, to be able to dive into those analytics and show, and, you know, working with whatever marketing managers you're working with to show like, okay, we think like, you know, if we include it in the email newsletter, it will have this X percent open rate, and that will lead to this many people on the site. And maybe you can even take it a step further and say like, okay, then we think we might get this many conversions or something from it, depending on how deep your analytics program is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So this is more on the lines of how to get that buy-in, how to get the most use internally out of something. So let's talk about building a piece of content that can kind of meet those expectations and maybe be able to be promoted over a period of time. You mentioned holidays, but not in the way that people might think. You know, you think about people creating content for a specific holiday and like the timeliness of it, but you're talking about a more evergreen approach. So what do you suggest there?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of tying in things with holidays, and something that we used to do at a past organization of mine is that we tie it in with, you know, like a major holiday, whether it be like Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that. But the problem I was finding is that those things have really short shelf life, right? Like you create it and then you don't want to put it out too early, because then, you know, news and journalists aren't really talking about, you know, Christmas shopping or Thanksgiving or whatever it might be. But if you put it out too close to the holiday, then that really shortens your outreach potential with it, right? Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about certain holidays and ones that would have continued evergreen life after it. So for example, at a past organization I worked at, we knew National Pet Day was coming up. You know, and there's a lot of these fun little holidays throughout the year, but we picked a piece and we, did a survey around how much do people spend on their pets. And we broke it out by dogs, cats, fish, all that. So it worked great for National Pet Day, but then we did that knowing that there's also going to be a National Dog Day. There's going to be a National Cat Day. I mean, I think there's even a National Pet, Your Pet Day, you know? So it continues to have this life throughout the year because you have these metrics that tie in with it, versus if you have something that's just around New Year's Eve, like it's only going to work with that. And I don't want to put people off from doing something that does center around like Christmas, Hanukkah, Thanksgiving, New Year's Eve, but including pieces in it that have a potential past that holiday will just, it gives you something to keep, you know, pushing and doing outreach for, or including it in your, you know, your other marketing campaigns and things like that. So when you think about creating content, thinking about, okay, it ties in well with, you know, Earth Day. That's great. But then that also has a life beyond Earth Day, right? Because people care about environmental, you know, issues long after it. So just gives it a longer shelf life and more, and it's more evergreen than something where it's just focused on one specific holiday and it's just not going to apply after that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There's this middle ground of you can create something that applies to that holiday and 10 other holidays rather than very specifically just that one day's event.
Right.
And this can apply to other things, right? Not just holidays, like recurring, just maybe pop culture events or trends or what have you. Like, what are some other examples outside of holidays that this can apply to?
Yeah, I think if you can latch on to a really popular pop culture piece, especially pieces that have a pretty active fandom, you can see a lot of potential with it. So for example, another piece I worked on at a past organization was how much would it cost to travel to every Star Wars filming location. And so we did this, I believe it was with episode, the Star Wars people are going to hate me, but it was it was like the very first one in the newest trilogy, I think, which is episode 7, I think. But we did it starting knowing, we created it knowing that there was going to be like a new Star Wars movie basically every year. So we knew that there was going to always be this potential. So there's a couple things that work here, right? Is that when there's a big movie like that coming out, there's a lot of press around it. So you're already able to kind of newsjack off of that a little bit, but then these pieces also come with really strong fandoms that are, oh, like, you know, there's a ton of like Star Wars fan sites and, you know, Twitter feeds and Facebook pages and stuff like that, where they're always going to be writing about this kind of, and, you know, talking about Star Wars and things like that. So it's definitely a long-term strategy, right? So you're creating something knowing 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, you can continue to build off of it, but that's part of the fun of it, right? That so someone could come back like after the next movie comes out or after, you know, like the Mandalorian comes out and you can see like where they were all filming it. And there's lots of opportunities, I think, because there's such strong fandoms out there that have like their whole ecosystems on the web, right? So when you think of like Star Trek or Star Wars or Pokemon, and or, you know, there, that's something I've been thinking about is this new show on Netflix came out called Shadow and Bone that I think also has like a really strong fandom based on the books and everything. So we start thinking about those and we're like, okay, there's going to be a lot of opportunities and lots of places that people are talking about this. And we'll continue to talk about it because there's new seasons, new movies, and all of that coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely Star Wars has had a lot of longevity.
Yeah.
It's a Disney property. It'll be going on forever.
And will continue to be, right? Like, I mean, yeah. I think I saw like Disney released its slate of stuff coming out. It's almost like all Star Wars stuff. Yeah, so there's lots of
Marvel.
There.
Yeah.
Right. That's basically it.
So what if someone's listening and they're thinking like, I don't know how to fit my brand necessarily into some of these things. Like it doesn't tie, maybe it's like B2B and it doesn't tie to pop culture super well, or what have you. Do you have ideas about how they can come up with concepts that still have a little bit of longevity? Like where can they look to get inspiration?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, just for me, I like to keep a pulse on just what's going on with the news. So that's a place where I've always gotten a lot of inspiration is like, you know, I listen to a couple of different podcasts, one, The Daily from New York Times, and one called Up First by NPR. And they just give me quick hits on what's going on with the news. And that's just helpful for me because then I get an idea of like, okay, what are people actually talking about right now? And what's in the ether? And that can help me think about like, okay, well, where does my brand tie in? But I think too, I think people get really tied into, you know, like, let's say you're like a transportation company. So you think like, oh, I can only talk about, you know, transportation. But if you allow yourself to be like branch out to more tangential topics, it can really help grow your outreach potential and the lifespan of a content piece that you're creating. So let's say you work on transportation. Well, there's like other areas that are relevant to transportation, right? So, you know, we brought up Earth Day before. So we're talking about transportation. So maybe you could do something on like, what are the most, you know, earth-friendly, you know, moving vans or whatever it might be, you know? So thinking about like, where are kind of the sectors that also intersect with your business? And that will let you be more creative than thinking like, well, I can only talk about transportation. Well, you know, there's other fun areas of it that you can offshoot to. But I'm a big fan of staying in touch with what's going on in the news, because you'll see what's popular, what people are talking about. And that's where I get a lot of my ideas, you know, and like things like The Skim too. I subscribe to that newsletter just to keep an idea on like what's going on in the news and also what's popular in pop culture and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more about the tangential route. You know, we're big on that here.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially when your goal is just like general awareness and links. Mm-hmm. I think that as long as it's not too far away, if you're just like talking about, you know, Marvel costumes and you're a transportation, it's like, okay, why are you writing about this? But
right.
I remember for a client like years ago, it was a travel client, and we did like fictional travel times, and we estimated, we like had races between like the Starship Enterprise and like, you know, something else. And I was like, this is fun because like, to your point, it hit on a lot of different fandoms. There were a lot of different people who might be interested in that when you're kind of leveraging the popularity of some of those topics.
Yeah, for sure.
And this applies not just to, you know, including multiple fandoms or multiple topics, but like just making content that approaches different niches, right? Like different industries and coming at it with that approach. Do you have examples of stuff that maybe you already gave one, but if you have any others that are like really applicable toward two like seemingly very different industries?
Yeah. And I think this is where it can be, you can be really fun and really creative. But you know, I used to work in the finance sector, which, and you know, we would start off doing things like just really straightforward, like budget calculators and things like that. And those things definitely serve their purpose, but you're going to run out of how many budget sheets can you come up with, right? And that's when we started thinking about like, okay, well, where can we branch out and what are those other popular demographics, hobbies, niches that will work well? So, you know, we think about where are people spending their money? And this was when one of those things where it's like, I'm a big football fan and, you know, I was getting ready for my fantasy football draft. And we were talking about like, okay, how much are we going to spend on the draft party and how much is the buy-in going to be? And it kind of hit me. I was like, oh, that'd be really interesting to do a piece on how much are people spending on their fantasy football draft. And we also included some additional pieces in there of like, how often are people checking their fantasy football at work and things like that. So there was a lot of fun elements of it, but it was like crossing these two things, like sports and finance. And there's other angles you could do with that too, like fashion and finance. So we never did it, but we could have done a piece on like, okay, how often do you go out and buy clothes? Like, what are the most common items you buy? Like, what's your biggest splurge that, you know, are you spending the most on shoes versus coats versus, you know, whatever it might be. So just thinking about like, you just really letting yourself branch out. And to your point before, you still want to stick with what's somewhat associated with your brand, right? Like, we weren't going to all of a sudden just be talking about like Marvel superheroes and not touch on anything finance related. But yeah, so just thinking about like, and two, when you think about those different kind of niches or demographics, that also really, widens your outreach potential. Instead of, you know, there's only a certain amount of finance websites, but when you also add sports in there, then that really widens out like how many people are going to be interested in it, who you can talk to, who you can like push it to. So by kind of letting yourself branch out a bit, it creates a longer life for your content, more outreach potential, like more evergreen potential. It really helps in a lot of different ways.
Totally. I think we specifically will come up with ideas that do exactly what you're saying, because it does. Mm-hmm. It adds so many more potential writers and potential mm-hmm. outreach prospects when you can speak to these different categories. I think finance is a really good, like, if you've never done this before or consider this, I would think finance is a really good one to start, because money impacts mm-hmm. almost everything. Like, there's always going to be a money angle to something you're talking about.
Oh my God, for sure. Yeah. And then I've also found in my past doing outreach is that if you have like a dollar sign in front of something, it definitely gets people intrigued. Like, how much do people spend on their pet? How much do people spend on, you know, shoes? You know, it's like those fun little tidbits you get out of, you know, a survey you might run that can really hook people into opening your outreach email.
Because it's so universal. I mean, right. Spending money and budgeting and personal finance applies to like everyone.
Right. And then people loved, and it also too, if you can find a data point or something where people can compare their behavior with someone else's, that people, it's just like a psychological thing, right? That people want to know, like, well, I spend this much on shoes. How much are other people spending on shoes? Am I like crazy high or am I crazy low? You know?
Yeah. The comparison point, seeing where you fit in with these things. God, it works so well.
It works so well, especially and that works too on a state by state analysis too. Like, people love to see like, where does my state stack up in terms of, you know, the debt or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Those ego bait type of things. You see those on social all the time where it'll be like your birth month or something. It'll be like, you from this. I'm like, why do I always look at these? I don't even act, but I have to look. I have to see which one I am.
I'm the same way. And I know it's a marketing trick and I use it myself, but I'm still like, I want to know where I land.
Right. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, if you do create content like that, you can use different parts of the project to pitch certain people, right? It might not be like a universal type of pitch, but you can say like, this part of the project we put together will be really interesting to this writer. And this other piece where you had mentioned you would create like a whole separate, you know, we say asset, that's like the vocabulary we use, but like another image or some kind of result from the research you put together, just to round it out a little bit more and include other perspectives, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So I think that's like certainly a really impactful approach people can use. I want to talk about something else that we, you know, spoke about before the show, which is this concept of like linkable content. And I use this phrase a lot, people use this phrase a lot, but let's talk about like, what do we even mean when we say that?
Yeah. I think, it's a word I have in my vocabulary a lot too. And when I say it to people who don't, you know, who aren't in like SEO specifically, they're like, what are you talking about? So when I think about linkable content, I think about it can be anything. It can be a blog, it can be a an image, it can be, you know, a data point, whatever it might be, but it's something that is intriguing enough that a journalist wants to reference it and thinks that it's valuable enough to include a link back to the content. And so that's why I go back, I've been mentioning a lot in our talk, but I go back to original research and data, because that I have found has been the most linkable, to use that word, because it's something that's unique. It's only something that you have because you have done the research yourself. But like I said, it really can be any kind of content asset, but it's something that is a journalist or a news site deems worthy enough to include and link back to. And more and more websites, that bar to meet that is getting higher and higher. So it has to be something truly valuable. It cannot just be, you know, if it's just a run of the mill blog, it's probably not going to get that. But if it's something that, you know, when we talk about these linkable, a lot of the linkable assets I've created, they include original research, they include infographics, sometimes even interactive ones. You know, I've created ones where you like hover over your state and will tell you like the data point and things like that. So it's something that is truly going to bring value to the piece that the journalist is writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the times I see this work for, when you say like, it is way harder for blog, like the standard blog post, it's like, you see people do this and they put like a list of statistics together. Right. And they're specifically thinking, I want people to link to this as a resource. Like that's the objective of making the piece of content. Like that's what they're measuring it by. Right. But it is such a difficult thing. You would basically have to be ranking in position one for like a keyword that makes sense to reference later for it to work. Otherwise, yes. Like, that original research aspect of it, that makes it newsworthy. Otherwise, why are people really going to link to it unless it's just like an incredible resource that...
Right. If it's something a journalist can get the answer to on 20 different websites, they're not going to link to you. If you're the only one that has that information, then your probability of getting linked to is much higher.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talk about like why this gets you more bang for your buck. Why is it important for people to consider linkable content as part of their strategy? How is that improving their ROI?
Yeah. So a lot of the times, like when we talk about these linkable assets, like the number one priority when I've created them in the past is links, right? But they can, like we've talked about before, they can serve a lot of different purposes. So if we're writing something about, you know, to go back to my example about how much people spend on their pets, like that was a great piece for many different reasons. We got a lot of ROI from it because it generated a lot of links, which is obviously going to help your SEO and help with your ranking and your overall site authority and expertise and everything like that. But it was also this piece that did really well on organic social and, you know, helped get us followers and things like that. Then it also did well in our email newsletter and, you know, had good open rates and had people engaged with our website and drove people into our website, you know. And then also it's just something that people search for. Like, you know, people are trying to see like, okay, how much do people spend on their dogs? How much do people spend on their cats? You know, they like to see how their spending compares to others. So it kind of hit on all these boxes, and good linkable assets should do that. Like it should be serving more than one purpose of just getting links. Cause usually in order for it to get links, it has to be an engaging, thoughtful piece of content. And usually those kinds of pieces do well in many different marketing channels. So it helps kind of with your brand awareness too, right? If you're looking, if a piece really does well and goes, you know, viral, it helps just elevate your brand too. So it checks all these boxes when you really put in the effort to a thoughtful, well-written, well-crafted linkable asset. It's something you'll get value from for a really long time. And if it's done really well, you'll continue to get links for a long time.
Yeah. You make a great point that, you know, it's not just inherently in the process of coming up with this content, you have to have a certain mentality of like, it has to be something engaging. It has to apply to a certain number of people, right? Like even just taking this approach builds in all of these other benefits rather than just kind of like whipping up a blog post, right? Because it is an investment. Like if you're going to do this like on an ongoing basis, it can take a lot of your time, money, etc. I know that some companies, and you brought this up as an example, off air, quote unquote, about like reports, like yearly, annual reports that brands put together, right? Like, is this like a smaller, kind of like slower example of this type of thing? Like, how does that work for them?
Yeah. We did talk about this off air, like you said. So, and this is something where I think like it works really well for like B2B companies who kind of want to do more serious pieces. Like the idea of doing something, like to go back to this transportation example of doing like something, you know, like, oh, what could be like the transportation of the future? And they could be showing like drones or something, like drone trucks or something like that. Like, to some people that might be too a little bit out there. So they want to focus on something a little bit more serious. And that's where these guides can be really helpful in getting links, but can also serve different purposes. So keep using this transportation example. So maybe you want to do something on like the state of, you know, transportation in the year. Let's say you do like, you know, you do freight vans or something like that. I'm not quite sure if that's the terminology, but it'll be really, so it serves a couple different purposes. It will be helpful within your industry as you establish yourself as like the authority and leader on where the state of, you know, freight vans are. But then also as you do these yearly or annual studies, or you can do them quarterly, whatever it works best for your brand, but it continues to establish yourself as the authority on that space. And by doing them on a yearly basis, you will open yourself up to interesting, you'll be able to see like interesting trends or comparisons and the data that you've collected that no one else is going to have, because you're the one collecting the data. No one else is going to have like these intense, surveys and studies and things like that. So, you get those comparisons, those trends, you get to be the authority in the space. There's also like other fun stuff you can do where you can create, like you can maybe possibly even, I'm not a huge fan of gated content, but you could gate some of it and it'd be a way for you to gather email addresses and things like that. But the main purpose of these kind of annual studies is it really helps position you as a leader in the space and someone who knows it well, and gives you access to this data and trends that no one else is going to have because you're the one running these surveys and studies.
And sometimes these brands have internal data that meets that requirement, right? Like that's a great start. Like if you haven't done any of this work, you're like, whoa, how do I get into this?
I think you bring up a good point about the internal data, because I think so many times people think like, oh, if we're going to run a survey, we're going to have to run it, you know, and it's going to spend this thousands of dollars. Like take a good hard look at the internal data you have. There might be some really interesting gold mine of data you have that you won't have to spend any money on, really.
Yeah. And it suits the annual report so well, because it's easier to pull on an annual basis, as you can make those direct comparisons, like you said. And then if you're seeing the results of that, then you do this on a more ongoing basis where you can get external data and create more and more and more and see that growth happen faster.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, you have the internal data. So like for the example I was giving, like maybe like over years, you've been able to see like more people are asking for eco-friendly like trucks or something like that. And so you can show something like over the past 5 years, this is how it's changed. Like extracting those little nuggets can do really well.
We've promoted projects before. Like we'll do full campaigns similar to what you were saying, where it's like 3 to 5 different graphics of results, and it'll be one data point. Yep. That takes that whole project, you know, like across different publications. And it's amazing to me that sometimes it's not even the thing you think is going to take off. It's like the specific data point is what's so captivating to people.
Yeah, for sure.
To think that way, like, oh, these are the like specific results, like this percentage, or like you said, this dollar amount, you're absolutely right. That doesn't really happen all the time. Yeah. Can be what takes the internet.
You know? Yep. Yeah. People love to know how much money people are spending.
Well, this was awesome. I think you touched on a lot of different things. At the end of every episode, I actually kind of throw a curveball and I ask a question unrelated to the topic we've been discussing. And this year it's creativity.
Okay.
So I ask people how they've been able to stay creative. To me, it's been top of mind because with COVID, things just got so monotonous. I'm like home and I can't go anywhere. And it's like, how do I think a little differently when it comes to work or just in general? How have you been able to try to stay creative?
That is a good question. So I think there's a couple different things that work really well for me. I find when I make time to exercise, that can be really helpful for me.
when I get up in the morning and go for my bike ride or go running, it really helps clear my mind, which I think just frees up my focus. And when I'm brainstorming later, things just tend to flow a bit easier. I'm also a big fan of meditation. I find that's really helpful for me too, like clearing my mind and allowing me to focus on work instead of thinking about like, oh, the trash needs to get taken out and the dog needs to go out or whatever it might be. So for me, it's basically about help clearing my mind so that other things can come in. And then lastly, I'm a big fan of reading. And I think so whether it's fiction, nonfiction, anything like that, when you're allowing other people's creativity to seep into your mind, it can often help inspire you.
Absolutely. I'm also a book person. I feel like everybody has like, okay, I use music to, you know, think to get inspiration or movies. I'm like, I have to, yeah. I read novels. Like I have to always be reading novels.
Yeah. I'm a big, big reader. I love it. I haven't been able to read as much this year, which is funny because usually I got so much of my reading done on the train, but I guess I love reading. I try to read as much as I can.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kate, knowing the objective of this show, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
Oh man, there's a lot of good people out there. It's funny is that I would normally say people like if it weren't you hosting this, I would say somebody from Fractal.
Oh, that's very nice to hear.
Oh my God. I'm trying to think. I mean, there's a really great channel resource for women in SEO called Women in Tech SEO. And the woman who leads it, her name is Arish, and she's fantastic. And she actually started her own podcast, Women in Tech SEO.
I saw that. That's so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she has a great outlook on SEO and also like project management and inclusivity. And especially she's been fantastic at creating a community, which a lot of marketing people try really hard to create a community around like their product or service. And she's done it really well. So I think she would be a fantastic guest.
Yeah, if anyone listening, if any women are listening and you're not in Women in Tech SEO, go check it out.
So good. There's like they do monthly workshops. They did a conference. Like it's a really great resource. I really recommend it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kate, for taking the time to come on the show and share all of your insights.
Thank you so much for having me, Amanda. This was great to geek out on SEO and links with you.
Seriously, we'll have to do it again soon.
yes, for sure.
If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, tips on how to make running suck less, because I'm getting back into it and I hate it, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I'm a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing and to Joao Pereira for logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.